Hello and welcome to another edition of Does the Team Think? And in this program, you'll hear a variety of answers to a variety of questions put by a variety of people. So let's meet the people who'll be doing most of the answering. Cyril Fletcher, Arthur Askey, Ted Ray, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And now, team, listen carefully, because here comes a question put to you by Mrs. Joan Miller. Mrs. Joan Miller, welcome to the programme. What's your question all about?
Does the team approve of the modern toiletries now used by men, and what are their own favourite perfumes?
Does the team approve of the modern toiletries now used by men, and what are their own favourite perfumes?
Well, the world is full of dirty people who do not have the conventional, the normal, the essential habits of washing themselves in the morning. And if you get on the leeward side of some of these chaps, it's honestly that the smell is so terrible.
Arthur, hold on, I'll move. I don't care.
Well, don't you move, Arthur, because you're the cleanest comic I've ever known until you get on the stage. Now, can I just go further and explain this? I always, every morning, even if I don't have time for a bath, I wish we had a bath anyway, if I had time to have a bath.
You take see. It off the hook.
No, I just said that for a plug. Off the hook. Did you have one of those? No, I do. I wash, I shave.
Do you?
Yes, and I wash myself all around the band parts.
Oh, dear.
And then he wipes down with an oily rag.
I do not.
Have you seen that TV advert where the fella puts this perfume on and all the girls rush to him? Mm. I bought a bottle of that, not the same effect. Although three old ladies waved their pension books at me. But
what's it coming to? I like to use shave lotion. Pardon me, Mother, just a moment.
Aftershave.
I wonder where you were. I always... Yes, aftershave lotion, because it makes me smart, you see.
Makes you smart.
Why did you make them laugh?
I prefer something really masculine, like
cigar.
Lily of the Valley.
Well, I went in the shop and I said to the... it was a big store, and I said to this fella, excuse me, can you tell me where the perfumery department is? He said, well, since you came in, it seems farther off than ever.
Mrs. Joan Miller has sat here very patiently. Mrs. Joan Miller, can you recommend any perfumes for these gentlemen?
Well, I don't know that you would really call them perfumes, more...
Smells.
Smells, maybe.
Yeah.
But
not
for Mr. Edwards, I would... think saddle soap and peppermint.
He would drink it.
Which comes
with
first?
With a cherry.
Do you rub it on or...
you smell the saddle and you go and have a ride.
The peppermint being very good for the wind. And
you... Madam, you get the wind, Jim?
Madam, you've been...
He's a wind jammer.
Mrs. Miller, carry on.
And Mr. Ray... because of his clean jokes, usually, and his performance with a violin, I thought carbolic and resin.
I must try that. I've often had the audience by the carbolics, you know.
Oh, that's the resin of it.
Mrs. Miller.
And Mr. Askey, because he always looks so turned out and well turned
has
out
been
and
told.
Well preserved, I thought perhaps mothballs and bay rum.
Or just a tiny touch of formaldehyde.
Yeah. I think we'd better keep her on, this one.
We are going to keep her on. She's got something for you, Cyril.
And Mr. Fletcher, I know he's a keen gardener, and I thought perhaps lavender, bonfires, and other odd odours.
Very good.
You don't mean to.
Put that in your hand.
The one thing that I really can't get used to is the perfume of my cleansing lotion.
What do you use for cleansing lotion?
Dripping.
Do you know, I was once in a film where they said the moustache got to look the same every day, so they used to get it right in the morning and spray it with that fix-it. So, what do you call it, madam?
Fixative.
Well, a kind of a hairspray.
Yes. Laxative.
A lacquer.
No, not...
Laxative.
I said laxative. A lacquer, and he hoped it was liquor.
The clergyman, clergyman used that, you know.
What, lacquer?
No, they all said, let us spray, don't
they? No, I had this lacquer on my moustache, but the awful thing is, when we broke for lunch, the beer tasted frightful through it. Yes. If you've ever had a pint of beer through a lacquered moustache, madam, I don't suppose you... Oh, I don't know, you might have. No, I don't suppose you know.
I don't think so. Anyway, thank you very much, Mrs. Joan Miller. Thank you. Let me introduce Mr. David Jones. Mr. David Jones, meet the team, but first of all, put your question.
If the members of the team were generous enough to endow a museum with a new wing, to which subject should it be devoted, and what sort of exhibits would they hope it would contain?
If members of the team were generous enough to endow a museum with a new wing, to which subject should it be devoted, and what sort of exhibits would they hope it would contain?
What about a one-armed pigeon?
A big one?
It needs a new wing.
See, I was going to say it's a little bit embarrassing if this museum is only going to get one wing, because it'll definitely fly upside down if it... But, Mr. Where'd you leave your coat? In your locker, I suppose, Mr. David Jones.
Yes, I like it. I don't care what the others say. That's
very
good.
Of course, you could have... there is one, actually, about old-time music hall. That would make a very good thing. I think a lot of people are interested in that sort of thing. And you could have exhibits like Harry Lauder's kilt, or George Robey's bowler hat and his stick, or Tessie O'Shea's knickers. You could have the exhibition in that, couldn't you?
But we already have a museum, as Arthur was saying, for the theatrical people of days gone by, as you said, George Robey's... famous hat and all these things, and little Titchy's boots, and it's kept by the Grand Order of Water Rats, and they have a special theatrical museum, Arthur.
When's your violin going into it?
Pardon?
When's your violin going into it?
Well, you don't seem to realise, Mac, it shows how ignorant you are, that the older the fiddle, the better the tune.
Yes.
And if there's any elderly lady in the audience, I'm willing to oblige later on, I believe.
With a solo on the violin, I believe.
Of course.
We hope so. I think Mr. Jones has one or two suggestions, perhaps. Have you, Mr. Jones?
Well, I thought possibly for Jimmy Edwards, we might have a gallery on tegastology.
On what?
Hello, he's pulled one on me there. Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. That's the one word I've never heard him say. Now, what does it mean?
It means the collection of beer mats.
Beer mats.
I never heard that.
Beer mats.
I thought you said mugs.
Mats.
He's no need to use a beer mat. He never has time to put the glass down.
Carry on, Mr. Jones.
I thought possibly for Ted Ray, a gallery on the musicology of feline visceral vibration.
Oh, I've often played that.
Yeah. He plays that on the fiddle.
Do you know, I've been playing that for years and never knew what it was.
You're very good in the second movement, though, aren't you, Ted?
No, I like the G-string best, especially in a scripture.
Mr. Jones.
For Arthur Askey, a gallery on industrial hymenoptera.
Ah, yes.
You've been working very hard at this.
Oh, indeed. Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, industrial, busy, hymenoptera bees.
Oh, I see. Oh, very good. Very good.
I like that. That's very good.
Since he's such a smart aleck, it should be industrious, actually.
I think Mr. Jones has got a season ticket for the British Museum, by the sound of it. I think Mr. Jones has got a season ticket for you. Listen to this one.
Well, for Cyril Fletcher, olfactory curiosities.
Now, I do know what that means.
Olfactory means lug holes.
No, it doesn't.
No, it means
it
nose holes.
It means a factory.
Nose holes, is it? Odd odour, yes.
That's right.
I think a brewer's wing for Jim, a fiddler's wing... fiddler's wing for Ted, and a miniature wing for Arthur, and no wings for me because I hate flying.
But it's funny.
Miniature wing for me. Yeah. One miniature in, one miniature out.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. David Jones. Thank you, David. Mrs. Gaynor M. Noakes sits on my right-hand side, and she puts this question to you. No, not at all. It's very pleasant. Mrs. Noakes, welcome to the programme. What's your question, please?
Splink is the code word associated with crossing the road safely. Are the members of the panel jaywalkers, or does the team splink?
Now, that's jolly good.
Wait a minute.
There you go.
The question from Mrs. Noakes is this. Splink is the code word associated with crossing the road safely. Are the members of the panel jaywalkers, or does the team splink?
Well, that's the worst you've ever repeated a question, Mac. Are you drunk or something?
No.
Good. Bad luck.
Mrs. Noakes, what does splink mean?
Stand at the pavement, look and listen. If there is nothing coming, cross and keep looking and listening.
And get me flattened by a bus.
And then now I stand on the pavement and I look and listen and see if there's anything coming, and if there isn't, I go home.
Now that you've enlightened me, now that you've enlightened me, Mrs. Coates. Now that you've enlightened me on that, I would say definitely that I am a splinker.
I'm a splinker, aren't we all?
No. It's fantastic.
Only, I know, the fusion of two minds.
Yeah. No, but we knock our heads together.
It's illegal in some countries, of course.
Oh,
to do what you call jaywalking, and incidentally, I've never discovered quite why that word.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because a jay is a bird that's a little bit nutty. The jay is like a magpie, and it sometimes flies in the wrong direction for various reasons. It will go off at a tangent or a motorbike.
I can contribute to your knowledge about these matters all around the world, because
Australia,
everywhere, they have different ways of instructing people to cross the road. I mean, in Paris, it says allez.
What does that mean?
Go, man.
What, me?
No.
It's a small street that you don't want to go.
Pieton allez.
Pieton allez.
In this country, it says walk, and if you walk, you'll get killed. And then there's another one where there's a little green man, his legs wobble about. I don't know what it's meant to mean, but as soon as his legs stop wobbling, if you're halfway across the road, what do? Stand and pray or something?
That's it.
Sorry to interrupt.
Cyril, I knew a little man who was actually knocked down by a car. And, you know, this car failed to stop. And, of course, this is a terrible thing. The driver gets panicky and away he goes. And the policeman came across to this little man and he said, did you get the number of that car? And he says, no, but I'll remember that laugh anyway.
I want to know, and perhaps you can tell me, Jim, what you do when you read those signs. You're driving along the country and you come presumably to somewhere near an aerodrome and you see this sign which says, beware, low-flying aircraft.
Well, actually, what it says is sudden aircraft noise. You prepare to duck.
But your car can't duck.
And if the duck are flying, you better be prepared.
Well, if you've got a sunshine roof, you're closing.
You know, it's a very strange thing. But I was, and this is true, Arthur. I was in Nairobi.
With Uncle Reuben.
No, Uncle Reuben is long since gone.
Oh, I see.
You're in Nairobi.
Nairobi, and it was pitch dark, and we'd just come from the airport, and we were going to the Norfolk Hotel, where we were staying overnight. And suddenly, the bus that picked us up at the airport stopped. And I said to this fellow, what's the matter? And he said, a zebra crossing. And it was a real zebra crossing. Honestly.
You know, it's a funny thing.
I never play sport hippodrome again.
It's a funny thing, though. If you look into a zebra's face, you can read his mind, but you can't read the news.
Yes.
Get off, Robbie.
They put a zebra in with a nice horse one day, you know. There was a terrible row. And the following morning they came in, and the horse was furious. And the keeper said, what's up? He said, you wait till I get his pyjamas off, I'll tell you.
That became what they call a crossbreed. Clever. Crossing, you see.
Oh, very good.
Never mind. But listen, madam, I'd just like to enlighten you fellas. In one city in Australia I went to, they've got traffic lights which actually stop. It's a square intersection. All the lights go red and all the things for pedestrians say cross, and they cross diagonally as well. So you have a sort of mad pavane.
You mean those are...
They got those all over. When I first day morning I was in Melbourne, I went across the road. Again, and you're not supposed to until the police give you permission, are you?
Yeah, that's right.
And I started walking across and he said, hey, Mac, get back there. I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm a new boy here. And he looked at me and said, new boy?
He had a point. He was probably on point duty.
Have you ever been to New York and seen the traffic there? It's something fearsome. You think it's bad here. But on Broadway, when the lights change, you see, they have a copper there. And the copper, you see, he shouts out, stop! And everyone stops. And then he says, pedestrians! And then he says, stop! Cars! Stop! pedestrians. And one little fellow was standing there, and the policeman walked across, and he says, can't you make up your mind? He said, I was just wondering when the Catholics go across.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you very much, Mrs. Noakes. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest, an actor-manager whose name is synonymous with farce on stage, screen and television. The man who's made the West End laugh for 25 years. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Ricks. Welcome to the program, Brian, and have a seat. Now, Brian, having been on the stage for many, many years, can I ask you, have you learnt your lines or do you want a prompter?
No, it's all right. I think I can get this question out all right. it is, what has been each member of the team's most embarrassing moment on stage?
What has been each member of the team's most embarrassing moment on stage?
You should talk, Brian.
I know.
He's had his trousers down so many times, the only time he gets embarrassed is when he takes off his jacket.
The first time I was really embarrassed was in my early days in the theatre. The first time I starred in a very provincial pantomime, and we had a producer kept us there till about 3 a.m, and this fellow was doing his nut, this producer, and he said, put the lime on the comedian! And the voice up at the top said, which is the comedian? I'd only been on for about 6 hours. And then there was another... Do you remember those old roller curtains?
Yeah.
The old roller curtains that used to go up like that. In my early days, we were doing the palace scene in a pantomime. This curtain came down, and one of the girls stood too near the roller curtain. She was in a crinoline, as all the other girls were. But she was a bit ahead of her line, and the roller curtain caught in her frock and took it right up. She hadn't got the long trousers. You know the long knickers they used to wear with the crinoline? Because she was ready to go home. And I may tell you that the pantomime was called Puss in Boots.
I've got one a little bit like that.
And have you really?
It didn't happen to me.
You and I must get together.
It didn't happen to me, it happened to Douglas Bing, and he was playing Dame, and his knickers burst. You see, he burst the bombazine of his bloomers and showed his wherewithal. And, of course, there was a little bit of a riot, but you won't believe this, the song that he was singing was There Are No Flies on Aunties.
Jimmy Edwards.
Well, I don't like to cast a damp on this conversation because I'm never embarrassed on the stage.
You just embarrass the audience.
I
take.
Yes. Now you've embarrassed him. No,
but I will say that I have been nonplussed once or twice.
I saw you nonplussed at the Coliseum.
Oh, that was another matter. But many years ago...
tell the audience.
Many years ago, I used to do a joke with my trombone where I filled it with water.
Oh, yes.
And then when I first blew into it, a lot of water came out, and I used to say rather amusingly, someone has been using this, you see.
Oh, yes.
And I was working somewhere...
It's very difficult with a trombone, I'll tell you that.
Well, you just the slide gets in the way, I must admit. But anyway, it acts as a sort of pump. But anyway, there was an occasion once when I was somewhere where there was no water backstage. I think it must have been in Canada somewhere. Anyway, I filled the trombone up with lemonade out of a bottle.
Oh, yeah.
And this worked very well. It all blew out and everything when I did the joke. But halfway through my trombone solo, the lemonade sort of dried and crystallized, and the slide stuck in number 6 position. And that's a very difficult position to be stuck in for anybody. I'll tell you that.
Team, our celebrity has been extremely patient, and I'm quite certain...
I wouldn't say that. He's just shut up for a minute.
That's all right. I'm very happy to listen to him.
I'd like to...
Well, I've been patient with him. I've seen his show.
I'd like to ask Brian Ricks, in all his years on the stage, what do you consider, Brian, your most embarrassing moment?
Well, that's the trouble, isn't there? There's so many of them, but I think one of the worst is in One for the Pot.
One for the what?
One for the Pot, years and years ago, when I was at the Whitehall. And I had to make an entrance, which got an enormous laugh, normally. And this particular night, I was off stage, and I heard this patter of feet rushing across the stage, and another patter of feet rushing across the stage, and another patter of feet rushing across the stage. And I made my entrance to absolute dead silence. And I couldn't understand this, and I looked, and all the audience had actually turned their backs on me and were looking at the back of the auditorium. And when I got off, I came and cursed and swore at the stage manager and said, what's going on? And it turned out what happened is that a car thief had just been caught in the mall, had been chased by two policemen, ran all the way across the stage, jumped over the floats, followed by two policemen and all their boots, right across the stage, over the floats, through the middle of the auditorium, right up the aisle of the stalls, right up to the actual exit of the theatre, where the thief raced through the exit, hailed a passing taxi and got away. And these two policemen were left panting on the thing. Now, this is actually true, it made all the papers the next day, of course. But I had to explain to the audience, because they honestly thought, a bit like Jim's show, that it was a free-for-all, you know, could happen.
Didn't you book him, Brian?
I was just going to say...
No, they killed his arm.
You've given me an idea for next week.
Yes, it's on better.
But, you know, in Nottingham, there were, or maybe still are, two theatres absolutely adjacent to each other.
No, one is now a car park, regrettably.
Yes, it is. The Empire.
Underneath the stage, it was like a catacomb. It really was. I mean,
that's the catacombs here at 9 o'clock every night.
And thereby hangs a tale. You see, these two theatres together, and on the bill was a magician. And his great trick was to get this girl in a trunk, lift it from the floor, bound in, and that was it. They turned it round a couple of times, he did a couple of abracadabras, and all of a sudden the girl was supposed to appear, running down the aisle, shouting, "Here I am." Now, next door, they were playing Morning Becomes Electra. And suddenly this girl came running down the stage, the aisle of the theatre next door, firing a revolver and shouting, "Here I am!"
That is true.
I must tell you something. Oh.
I once appeared on the stage in a summer show as a one-legged sailor. And I'd got this right leg of mine, you see, all strapped up, and I'd got this false leg on from the knee downwards. And I came on with a stick, and I'd not rehearsed this, because I hate rehearsals. And as I came on, it all went rather well, and as I went off stage, I fell. And it was at Hastings, and at Hastings White Rock Pavilion, they have a sort of trough in between the footlights and the stage, and I fell into this trough. I couldn't get out.
That got a horse laugh.
The audience didn't know that the footlights were burning my bum something horrible.
And there was a terrible smell of roast pork all over the place. dear Andy, very good.
I am.
Brian, I do remember that you and David Jacobs once went for a holiday and somewhere together, and something rather funny happened.
Well, actually, this is you described me when I came on as being an actor manager connected with Farce for all these years, and of course, Farce is a difficult word. And it was in Jamaica, and there's a well-known daily paper there, and the reporter said that I was London's best-known Farce actor. He wrote that in his notebook, but unfortunately, when the paper came out, it was a four-letter word. To make matters even worse, it...
You didn't get the raspberry, did you?
Honestly, Brian, I'm wrecking my brains.
To make it even worse, it described David, who then was very well known as a disc jockey. It said that he was also the BBC's best-known dicks jockey.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Brian Rick.
Thank you.
And Mrs. Margaret Davies has a question for you. Mrs. Davies, welcome to the programme. What's your question, please?
Do members of the team subscribe to a press-cutting agency? And what would they most like to read about themselves?
Do members of the team subscribe to a press-cutting agency? And what would they most like to read about themselves?
Well, I don't belong to a press-cutting agency now, because I know I'm good. But in my early days, thank you very much. Thank you.
Five of those know you're good, too.
But in my early days, I did belong to a press-cutting agency, and my dear mother used to look after my press-cuttings and put them into books. And I never saw them until years later when she died, and I wanted to refer, because I'm writing my life story, I wanted to refer to my press-cuttings, and I found that my mother had destroyed all those that are a bit anti-ASCII. So my career in my press-cutting agency is one long success.
With no pages.
That's right.
With no pages.
The first time I really got anything of a rave notice, you know the green room rag they have every year at the Adelphi Theatre?
Yes, the walls are filthy.
That's the green room rag. It's a theatrical thing. They have a concert at the Adelphi every year and have all the big names in show business. And I was asked to go along there at a very short notice, and I went along. I was then a concert party comic. And I did rather well. As a matter of fact, it said in the Telegraph the following day, the success of the evening was a substitute, marvellously funny and original, a name to look out for in the future, Arthur Askew.
he walked on sideways.
Cyril Fletcher.
Well, I get notices these days, which I suppose is understandable, where they say always that I'm an avuncular figure. I'm sick of reading that I'm an avuncular figure, and it does distress me because I don't know what it means.
You're like an uncle. It means you're like an uncle, and yeah, you are.
It's a very nice word.
An owl's uncle.
it's like the other word that I have been called is veteran.
What are you doing?
Sir. Yeah, well, you imagine me.
Veteran comedian,
yeah. One press cutting I would like to read would be, Mr. Arthur Askew today received a telegram from the Queen congratulating him on his 100th birthday. And when the telegram arrived, Mr. Askew was out taking his 2-year-old son for a walk.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's great. Oh, I got one in there. I didn't do very well in Plymouth. I don't know why sailors didn't like me. Possibly because I wouldn't listen to reason. But it said in the Plymouth Echo or whatever it was, Ted Ray should go far. How about Aberdeen?
Thank you very much, team. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askew, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questions and, of course, our special guest, Brian Rich. This is Donald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Bye.